Last talk for this morning is Gregor Mossbaum from GSU talking about the Alexander Conway polynomial, Milner numbers, etc.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's a great pleasure for me to be here, and I would like to thank Malek for inviting me. Unfortunately, I never had the privilege of meeting Pierre Leroux. So this is a very new crowd for me. I'm not a combinatorist or graph theorist or statistical mechanic in any way. I'm really a topologist. So please allow me to use some words in maybe a slightly different way, but I hope it will be understandable. So I'm here because somehow during some topology, Arkady Weintraub and I, we apparently discovered this Pfaffian matrix tree theorem. So I want to talk about this a little bit, and I want to show you where this came from. So there will be a little bit of topology, in fact, not theory. And I will mainly use the blackboard. So, I'm sorry? Well, I will show you a transparency at some point, but and I have some good or bad news according to to taste. So this is actually a 1 hour talk, so according to the program. So you shouldn't be surprised if I keep going on after 45 minutes and just complain to the organizers about this. But anyway, if people want to leave, I will not be offended. Okay, so as I said, this is joint work with Arkady Weintraub, who's at the University of Oregon, and it's in some sense already old. So this sort of a combinatorial version is published here, and sort of the topological piece is published there. So it's like 5-6 years old. But there have been some recent developments, and I will try to talk about them. So let me just remind you of the classical matrix T theorem. And I just write MTT. So it was already on the board yesterday. And I just do this for the complete graph. So for what I think you guys call Kn, or Km. Actually, I want to use Mn for some other thing. So, and then I can just say, well, I look at this Laplacian matrix. So L, which is basically just has entries xij. So ij from 1 to m. And then they are symmetric. So xij is xji. And they really don't have the diagonals. And in fact, for the diagonals, I'm going to take xii equal to minus the sum over the xiks, where k is different from I. And this is really the Laplacian matrix for this complete graph. And then the theorem says that if you take the determinant, in fact, I should probably take a minus sign here, the determinant of this matrix L, I take out any line or column. So this means take out ith line and column. I hope you can read this. Can you read this? Then this is sum over spanning trees. So this is a spanning tree polynomial of this Kn. So for example, if we have K3, so then R1, 2, 3, then you would have, for example, for this spanning tree, 1, 2, 3, you would have the monomial X1, 2, X2, 3. Okay? And there are no signs. So if we like, we can call this thing, we can give it the name K sub M. And so this is a homogeneous polynomial of degree. So this should be M, I'm sorry. Homogeneous polynomial of degree M minus 1 in those xijs. So Xavier says he maybe doesn't like this notation, but I will write it like this. So homogeneous polynomial of degree M minus 1. In these symmetric variables, here I just write S2, say, of Rm. So here the bases are these xijs. And then I take homogeneous polynomials of degree m minus 1.
some of those inclusion, some of those memberships must be included.
I'm sorry?
You have element of, element of?
No, this Km is a polynomial in of degree m minus 1 in these variables x, i, j.
Oh, I'm sorry. So,
so I view this.
Script Km.
Script Km is different from this. From this, this is the complete graph, and this is this polynomial. So Km of, so Km of these variables x, i, j. I'm sorry?
The first element of.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay. Great.
Sorry. Okay. So. Anyway, so this is, and I mean, you all know this, and okay. So, what about what is the Pfaffian theorem? So, I mean, I was wondering how should I do this? Should I just tell you how we found this, or should I just make sure you actually get the statement? And so, I will just do the statement at the very beginning. So, what I'm going to do is so. So the Pfaffian MTT. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take, so this was minus this matrix. I'm going to take, now I'm taking variables, so indeterminates y ijk. And again, 1 less or equal ijk less or equal m. But they should be skew symmetric. So it means if I do y, sigma I, sigma j, sigma k, this should be minus 1 to the sigma, which is the sign of the permutation sigma, y I j k. That's what it means, sigma permutation of three letters. So in particular, there's no y I something. They're all 0. And then I take lambda, following matrix, just the matrix with entries lambda ij. And what I take as lambda ij will be just the sum over k of these yij k's. So that's a skew symmetric matrix. And the theorem is so this is, so together, apparently we discovered this with Weintraub, is that if I take the Pfaffian, in fact, I will take minus 1 to the I minus 1 Pfaffian of this matrix, where I take out, again, the ith line and ith column. This is equal to the spanning tree generating function polynomial on the complete free regular hypergraph. So this is something I will just call free graph. And so what are these things?
Excuse me.
Yes?
In the sum in the middle of the board, do you want k to be different from, k can be anything?
K can be anything. Okay.
Because if I is equal to j and k is equal to I.
I'm sorry? Then some of them are 0. But I said
yeah,
that.
But I is non-zero, right?
I is also 0, according to this.
Two indices are the same, it's 0.
It's 0.
Yeah, but what's that permutation?
If all three.
So what is a three graph? So I just have a set of vertices and a set of edges. So usually an edge has exactly 2 vertices, but now I wanted to have 3. So E is just a collection of three-element subsets of V. That's it. So in hypergraph, three regular, so every edge has the same cardinality, and there this is 3. So here's an example of a three graph. So this thing has 9 vertices, and it has 4 edges. And every edge has indeed 3 vertices, so the edges are yellow. The vertices are these. So some people would call them.
Edges.
You cannot see the yellow.
Right. Can you do it in red? You have a red chalk there.
I thought the yellow was actually visible.
It is, but it's identical to white.
Okay, but anyway, I think that's good enough. So an edge will be drawn something like this. So some people use cacti and would draw this like this, with a polygon. So it's somehow the same thing. But for some reason, I want these diagrams to look like this.
You just need to slow down.
I'm sorry? And you see, this thing I would actually call a tree, and in fact, it's a spanning. So the notion of tree is kind of obvious. You just realize the thing topologically, and it should be a tree. So something that would not be a tree, for example, if you have four vertices and you do something like this. I will use yellow, although Alan can see it. If you do something like this,
okay.
This is not a tree.
So in a tree, the triples are almost disjoint.
Yes. And in fact, if you have a tree will implies that the number of vertices is odd, which you easily prove by induction. So in this theorem, actually, if M is not odd, so I may as well assume M is odd, because the right-hand side is going to be 0 if M is even. There are no spanning trees. Also, the left-hand side is going to be 0, because this is an M by M matrix. If M is odd, M minus 1 is, if M is even, M minus 1 is odd, and then the skew-symmetric matrix will have 0 determinant, and so the Pfaffian is the square root of the determinant. So maybe I should write this once. So the determinant of this lambda I is the Pfaffian of this lambda I squared.
Excuse me, just a really silly question, but does the edge ijk take a weight, yijk or
yjik? No. We are going to talk about this in a minute, but right now, this is the definition, just three element subsets. Okay? So let me just look at an example. So what happens for m equal to 3? There's really just one thing you can do. 1, 2, 3. So we'll get y 1, 2, 3. This is this polynomial p3. But on the other hand, if you now look at the Pfaffian of this matrix, so it's what is this matrix? So the entry here, the 0, 0, something entry is 0. Actually, all diagonal entries are 0. Here, the only thing you can write is 1, 2, 3. Here, the only thing you can write is 2, 1, 3. This I take out anyway. And the Pfaffian is indeed y 1, 2, 3. And y 1, 2, 3 is minus y 2, 1, 3. So the determinant of this thing is y 1, 2, 3. Sorry, minus y 1, 2, 3. Anyway, you know how to compute the determinant. Because this is minus this, it fits. Okay. Now what happens for m equal to 5? Well, then if you just write down this matrix, try to do the determinant of maple, it will say overflow. There are already too many terms. But in fact, it's very small. So what happens is that this p5, well, there will be one term, which is y1, 2, 3, y3, 4, 5. And this would correspond to this graph. So I have my vertices, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I have a spanning tree in yellow, which would be like this. So I'd say I take together those, and I take together those. And then there are 14 more. Because you see, how many are there? Well, you have to somehow choose one vertex. In this case, the combinatorial type is unique for m equal 5. One vertex which has two of them, so there's 5 possibilities, and then there are 3 to choose the other one in pairs. So there are 15 in all.
So your convention for taking the weights is that for each?
I'm going to explain.
Okay,
there. So there's as Christian points out, there is some problem here. Why do I write this? Why don't I write 2, 1, 3? Very good question. I was going to explain. So how to write this thing? So let's do this example here. So what I would write to lie, so the monomial, if this is my spanning tree, and again, in the spanning tree, there is no information about some ordering here.
Put your point on the triples which are edges.
Wait a minute, let me just do it my way, and then you can comment on it. Okay? So what the monomial y to the t, well, up to some sign, it will be just be y135, y5456, y275, Y789. So up to some sign, it will certainly be this.
And what is Y?
So that, I mean, the monomial associated to this tree.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Y sub T. So in this formula, I should write this as sum over L minus 1. I mean, sum over Y sub T. T are these spanning trees. Okay? So how would I do this? So basically, what happened is I made a choice. For each of these three-element subsets, I made a choice of a cyclic permutation. So I chose this one rather than one. So I chose 1, 3, 5 here rather than choosing 3, 1, 5. Now, there's no embedding information here. I don't have a cyclic orientation here.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what I do is I just do the following. I make this choice. So I have choose three cycles, say I sub E, J sub E, K sub E for every edge. So here are my three cycles. So these are three cycles in the symmetric group on M letters. Now I take the product. And maybe let me do this over here, where they have some more space. Yes, but there's already something on them. So then I look at the product. Product of these three cycles. So I take the product in any order actually of these I, E, J, E, K, E. And then little lemma, this is going to be an M cycle. Exactly if and only if this thing is a tree. So this is actually an M cycle. So you can write this thing as S of 1, S of 2, up to S of M in the cycle notation, where S is something, some permutation. And it's the sign of this permutation.
And you mean that you...
So you can write this as also as S, and then there's one, this standard cycle, S inverse. So it depends on the choice that I declared that this is my standard M cycle. M is the number of vertices.
So there's a product of permutations, which.
Yes.
And it's these odds for every sequence, because it's order dependent in principle.
Yes.
But.
What's your question?
So for every order,
yes, the sign is independent of how I do this product. But it's not the sign of the M cycle I get, because it would always be even, because M is odd. So it's a little bit subtle here, but that's the answer. And now you can see that if you chose a different one here.
It's not the sign of that M cycle.
Oh, you're right.
It's
no.
So what is it the sign of?
It's the sign of this permutation S.
It puts the M cycle into the standard order.
So there is a graphical way to do this, which can be read in the paper, but I will not do it now. I've made some choices what I do, what I don't do. So this is the definition. So what you will find, for example, if you do P5, which is already written here. So the next one, for example, if I want to do Y124, Y435, this would actually appear, I would have to put a minus sign. And then plus 13 more. This is what comes out when you do the computation. And this is the answer. This is the whole theorem. So I could stop here.
Really, you are saying that it doesn't matter how you associate, that it doesn't change the sign.
Yes. So I'm saying the thing has nothing to do with cyclic orientations.
Yeah.
And indeed, for every, so in the beginning I thought maybe one has to use oriented edges or something like this. But it's not true. In the sum, for every tree there is just one monomial. So the monomial really should, if things are correct, should be associated really to the tree without any further information. And that's a claim is the case. The only choice that was made is this sort of is the choice of this n cycle here, which corresponds of the order of the entries in my matrix also, of course. So it's consistent. Okay, so what about proofs? I mean, it's a bit like this Kirchhoff original theorem. I mean, once you know the statement, you can make your own proof. So we actually gave two proofs. So in so the first one with contraction deletion. And I mean, you can prove the, so I mean, it's the same story. You have your tree. This polynomial will satisfy some, so you have some edge here. And then you have some other stuff. Say this is 1, 2, 3. So we have the PM. Say in variables 1, 2, 3, 4 up to M. You can write this. One term is PM, where you just put 1, 2, 3 equal to 0. So that counts all the trees that do not contain this edge. And then there will be another term which does contain it. So write 1, 2, 3. And then you have some PM minus 2. But then somehow this was contracted. So now you have some very fat vertex here with index, say, 0. And you have these things sitting on it. So you would have to take PM minus 2 of 0 and then 4, 5 up to M. But that wouldn't be right. And then in this thing, you have to substitute. So for 0, you have to substitute 1, 2, and 3 and take the sum. I mean, you can formulate this in many ways, but this is one way to formulate it, which I will actually use. So for example, I can derive this thing with respect to y1, 2, 3 if I want, and I can see what the answer is.
So what do you mean, 0, 1, 2, 3 are labels?
So it means that if I, whenever we are, so this would be something, the indice, the vertex sets are the original ones from 4 to m, and there is this new guy, which I call 0, after contracting 1, 2, 3. And now any tree on this guy, they will have, somewhere there will be index 0, many in several monomials. And then this index 0 has to be replaced by 1, by 2, and by 3. And each time I will get a legal spanning tree on the original one. I mean, it's the same story as the usual contraction deletion relation.
I don't understand. What's the point of these labels?
Is that the labels induce the weights?
OK, so if you like, one thing, I mean, again, Xavier will not like it, but I would like to think of this PM as an element, a homogeneous polynomial of degree, now half degree, m minus 1 over 2, because this is the number of edges, of lambda 3 of Rm. And so these are my labels 1, 2, up to m. And so if I do PM minus 2, I will only have m minus 2 labels. And one of them I want to call 0 because it came from this contraction of 1, 2, and 3. Anyway, there's nothing non-trivial going on here. It's just the usual contraction deletion relation. OK.
You would have weights by 0, 4.
So, sorry, I.
Oh, well, why? Because 0 is going to become part of some other hyper edge.
Yeah.
And you have to successively replace it by 2 or by 3.
When you contract, you keep the parity, right?
I'm sorry?
You contract, you keep
yes.
the parity.
Yes. So anyway, let me just wipe this out again.
It happens for graphs with deletion contraction. You just don't see it.
So this is the original proof. But then there is a proof by topology. And I actually want to explain this a little bit. So this is actually how we found this. But then there is a very nice proof. So I don't know which one was first. So let's say up this lam. Which does it with Grassmann-Berezin calculus. And then if I understand correctly, this was a very much generalized lay. So first of all, he generalized it also to higher kinds of hyper edges. But I'm not going to talk about it. And then there is, this was then generalized in this amazing paper by 5 authors, which I wrote down somewhere. CJSSS, and most of them are here. So Caracciolo, Jacobsen, Saleur, Sportiello, Sokal, something like this. So
did we generalize it?
But I don't actually. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, this Grassmann-Berezin. I mean, anyway, I'm just sort of doing the easiest case of something.
I didn't know that our theorem contained yours.
I'm sorry?
I didn't know that our theory.
Yeah, I actually, anyway, I just wanted to mention this. because I think this is very nice.
I mean, and it is very nice, but I didn't know it contained you.
And there is something by Hirschman and Reiner. So they prove it using a sign-reversing involution. And maybe this is for combinatorists the most satisfying one. I don't know. I'm not a combinatorist.
I agree.
Huh?
I agree with the rest.
So it means there is this huge cancellation going on, but somehow you can really pair up the guys that are canceled.
Sorry.
So, yeah. And of course, what I should say is, I mean, I won't even write it down. You can make a version of this for a general free graph. I mean, like the usual thing, I just formulated for the complete one. But if you know for the complete one, you can write it down for any. I will not bother to do this.
You just set a bunch of weights to zero.
Yes. Yeah, it's absolutely equivalent. So what have we done? In some sense, we have just explained one little thing, namely this. So there's a classical theorem. You have ordinary graphs. You get a sum over trees, spanning trees. I forgot to say spanning trees. I'm sorry. And then for these three graphs, the edges look like this. You have a Pfaffian tree. Pfaffian tree theorem. Now I want to explain how this came about. So the first thing is, I guess, well, I won't do this sexy stuff. So just striptease. Just show you the whole thing, what we somehow... Anyway, let's just leave it down. So where did it come from? So it really came from, I'm really a topologist. So it came from quantum topology. So how to say this? So finite type invariance of links. So this is also Vasiliev invariance of links. Okay. So what is a link? So a disjointly embedded oriented circles and also ordered. I know which one is the first one, which one is the second one, and so on. In R3, or a topologist would say actually S3. It doesn't really make much difference. And usually I call M the number of components, so it's the same M. So, and I write such a thing as, say, L1 union L2 union LM. But I mean, the union sign doesn't really take into account how it's linked. And if M is 1, it's called a knot. So for historical reasons. So here are some examples. And then what is the first sort of invariant of these things you can do? It's really the linking number. And what is the linking number? So the linking number of L1 and L2. This would be actually, I take L1, and now I write dot sigma 2. So sigma 2, this is an oriented surface with boundary of sigma 2 equal to L2. And this dot is the algebraic intersection number, so the number of points in L1 intersected with sigma 2, but with signs. So here would be an example. L1 is this trefoil knot. L2 has been drawn there. I will try to draw the surface for L2. Well, this one is not so hard. There's just one intersection point right here. And this intersection point has a sign. And in this case, I have the linking number of L1 and 2 is equal to plus 1. And this is symmetric. So this is actually a linking number of sigma of L2 and L1. Now, this is a little bit hard to see if you see this for the first time, because you would have to find an oriental surface that bounds L1. And you would say, well, just take this band here. And it certainly pierces just once here. But that wouldn't be legal, because this band is actually not orientable. You would not be able to define a sign here. So in order to find a surface that bounds L1, you have to think a little bit. I can do it, but let's not do it now. But important, this is symmetric.
There is a simple recipe on the drawing for crossing counting, or you really
yes, yes, there is, there is. There are 1,001 ways to define it. I just give you one. So this would be an interesting example where actually linking number is zero. Because here you see this is your surface. It pierces twice, but with opposite sign. And yet they are linked. So they're certainly, this certainly described the whole linking theory. Now here's an interesting example. These are the Borromean rings. They actually exist outside this building, somewhere out there in the metal. What's interesting here is that all linking numbers, individual linking numbers, are zero. Which you can see. So the white one and the green one are actually not linked. And then I claim I can define this triple Milner number. Triple Milner number. So this is very old, very nice thing. So the way this goes is that this mu, so there is a little lemma that says if the linking number of L1 and L2 is zero, then you can find sigma 2 such that the intersection of sigma 2 with L1 is actually empty. Not just the same number of points with positive sign as with negative signs, is actually empty. So what you would do here, you would just say, OK, I take a little tube here, and I just do this. I walk along this surface all the way around along here, along this component. So I have these tubes. And now I have a surface of genus 1. So this new sigma 2 has the property that it does not intersect L1. So this was L2, this was L1. It no longer intersects it. And this is the general principle. And then the definition is you do mu of L1, L2, L3. Now you take the intersection of these three surfaces, sigma 1 dot sigma 2 dot sigma 3. So this will be some picture. Somehow you have now intersection of three surfaces. So it's will generically you have some horizontal plane, some vertical plane. They intersect in some line. And then you have also a plane like this. And then there will be just this one intersection point, and it will have a sign. And you count these guys. That's the triple Milner number.
Sigma 1 is the surface with boundary on L1, which doesn't close L2.
Neither L2 nor L3. So, I'm sorry?
So there's the cyclic definition. Sigma 1
yes.
is the
yes.
one with
yes.
boundary L1, do not
yes.
close L2.
And neither L2 nor L3. Yeah, you have to think a little bit, but it works. You have to do it sort of for both, and then for all of it. So I'm not even trying to draw this here, OK?
Which but is, however, the easiest case possible.
Yes. Anyway, if I wanted to draw it, I would draw it somewhat differently. Anyway, the answer in this case is plus or minus 1. And this mu is skew-symmetric. So if you define that, if you say this is mu 1, 2, 3, then this mu ijk is skew-symmetric. And just believe me. I'm not going to explain. So these are two nice invariants. Where's the page? Did I want to say more here? No. And now we need one more. This is this Alexander Conway polynomial. So Alexander, so the Alexander version is really very old. Polynomial of a link. And again, oriented link. So this will be denoted by lambda L of z. So the variable is z. So I can write this as c0 plus c1z plus c2z squared plus etc. Each ci is an integer, and it's a polynomial in z. That's what it is. And for combinatorics, really the nicest way to define this thing is by its gain relation. So defined, but it's not obvious that this is well defined, just to say nabla of this crossing minus nabla of this crossing is equal to z times nabla of the smoothing. And so this is called skein relation. And then there's the other thing, it's normalization that says if you do nublink on an unlink, and it has m components as always, then this will be 1 if m is equal to 1 and 0 otherwise. The theorem, this is the well-defined procedure. So it's not the Jones polynomial, it's the Alexander-Conway polynomial. So, I mean, maybe you have seen this, but I will just show you that this actually makes sense. So here's a, here is how you would compute this for a trefoil, and the computation is going to be useful. So there is this stick. I guess this needs to be pulled a little bit like this. So we try to compute it for this trefoil. I apply my skein relation here. So this is my trefoil. If I change that crossing, I actually have an unknot. So here, the value is just 1. Then it should be z times what happens when I smooth. Now, this has become a link with 2 components. But never mind, something has gone down. The number of crossings has actually gone down. So I start again. I compute for this link at this crossing. Well, if I do the other one, I have a trivial link. So this actually gives me 0. So it's equal to z times, and now this is again just an unknot. So here's 1. So the total answer is 1 plus z squared. And claim this, you can always do this. Now, well, there's an interesting feature of this, and that is for this two-component link, the linking number was 1, and actually we found z. So for this, this thing right here. And this is actually a general fact, but let me say something else before. So combinatorics people really like, I guess, would like this definition, but it has a drawback. And the drawback is I really need it to project my link on the plane, to make a diagram, and in order to apply these relations. So there is the original, there's a topological definition. So topological definition of this nabla. And I will not do it. But somehow you just take the three-dimensional space, which is the complement of your link, and you do something with this. And it's manifestly a knot invariant. This one you would have to prove that it's a knot invariant, actually. And what it will give you is that this nabla L is really the determinant of something which you construct, some finite matrix. I will not explain. But what happens is that actually it will start, what you can see is it will start in degree m minus 1, see m minus 1 of L times z to the m minus 1 plus higher order terms. So for example, for this m component, for this two component thing, it would start in degree z, degree 1. And this seem m minus 1, m minus, well, this is exactly the Laplacian matrix L. I take out a line and a column, and then, I'm sorry, the determinant of it, of course, is the determinant of this Laplacian matrix where I take out a line and a column, and for every xij, I have to substitute, I hope you can read this, the linking number of the ith and the jth component. I guess this is the way how one writes in computer science. Yes. So for example, for this two-component link, we just have the linking number L12, which in our example was 1. So I would like to call this Lij. And indeed, so it means the coefficient of z is just the linking number, but then there are higher ones. And so this really comes out of the topology. It comes out as a determinant. But of course, we know there is this Kirchhoff formula. So we know it's a thing, something about spanning trees. And in fact, this was already known to people, I mean, many years ago. So people who discussed this, they knew it's Hosty and Hosokawa and these people. They knew you can write this as a sum over spanning trees labeled by these linking numbers.
Do you really mean higher order terms or lower order?
Higher order terms. So higher powers of z. So you see, if if this thing already says if it has m components, it's a trivial link, it's actually zero. Now, if you try to introduce some crossings,
every time you get it,
you cannot get any power of z lower than m minus 1. Think about it. So this is, and I mean, this was really the starting point for our work. So anyway, so then the next thing is I'm running out of white chalk. I guess this one. Okay. So the starting point for what we did was actually the following theorem of Levin. And I understand he says it can be, as he says, culled from work of Trialdi. But I don't really know. Certainly, Levin gives a very nice dramatic proof of this, which says that if all Lij, so remember these are these linking numbers of Li and Lj, are zero, then actually this nabla L of z will start in a much higher degree. The first term will actually be twice as high, z to the twice m minus 1, plus higher order terms. And this one will be exactly be the determinant of this matrix I call lambda. Again, I take out a line and a column. And for this yijk, I have to substitute the triple Milner number, mu of li, lj, lk.
Okay, so all lijs are zero.
All lijs are zero, yes. So this is what he says. And again, this follows from this topological definition. In fact, for those of you who know this topological definition, this is somehow made out of the Seifert form. And in this Seifert matrix, you can find, I'm sorry, I should have said this here, so let me not say this. Anyway, this is what he says. And so, of course, we were wondering, well, I mean, in fact, he asks, is there a spanning tree interpretation of this? So we played with this a little while, and we found this this spanning tree theorem. But in fact, we are going to give a new proof of this result using finite type invariants. So I have still, I guess, 15 minutes. So let me show you a little bit of stuff. I guess I will not be able to. Yes, that's what I will try to show you, if I can. But it comes out of quantum topology.
You mean determinant of
Fatian? I'm sorry? Well, we will see if I get there. So,
the theorem has determinant in it.
This theorem has a determinant in it. Yes. So it's going to be the square of the Pfaffian.
So you've actually gone a little beyond that.
Yes. Well, I mean, everybody knows the determinant of a skew-symmetric matrix is the Pfaffian squared. So I'm not really claiming any originality there. So what happens is that Cn is a finite type invariant of order n. So whatever that means. What then happens is there is a general theory. In fact, if you know what it means, it follows immediately from these gain relations. But never mind. Now what happens is I can take a sort of space of chord diagrams. Which I denote by A of degree n. So degree n. I mean, this just means n chords. A n on m. Or something I would have Q vector space generated by things where I have these my M circles, like this. And then I put M chords. So let me use this yellow, although it's really the same. I put some chords on it, for example, like this, whatever. So this would be degree 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then there are some relations, which I'm not going to give you now. And it's really amazing that when we actually don't know the dimension of this space.
They must connect everything?
No. Anything. Anything is allowed. Now, what happens is, and I will, because I have no time, I will just cheat a little bit and give you something that's not strictly speaking correct, but it's correct to lowest order. And I guess with physicists in the audience, this is already very good. Sorry, I take that back.
Always.
Anyway, sometimes I feel frustrated because I don't understand physicists' talk, and there is clearly something very interesting going on in their talks. But anyway, so I will just for so a theorem, Concevich. So there exists sort of a universal finite type invariant of links Z, which is a power series, Zn of L, and this Zn of L takes values in this space of diagrams, which unfortunately we don't even know a dimension of when n is big. And then the corollary of this is that sort of fact there exists a linear form Wn. So this is just a linear form on this space An. So I just write it like this. I guess I should write An of M dual, such that nabla L of Z is just the sum n equals 0 to infinity of this Wn applied to this Zn of L Z to the n.
This is a number or a polynomial?
This is which one? Z?
Z
is some vector in this huge vector space, but finite dimensional. So it's a collection of chord diagrams. So physicist Luransky would say this is somehow done of U11 or GL11 Trans-Hymans field theory. But let's not worry about that right now. So something like this. Now I claim you can actually understand this weight system. So this W is called weight system, since this this is called weight system. And is the terminology is the weight system of the Alexander Conway polynomial. So what happens is you can compute this recursively. If you have Wn, so this thing, if you see some diagram that has n chords, this is where this Wn is supposed to be defined. But I just focus on one chord. So this is just some piece of my n circles. Could be the same circle, could be different ones. And just focus on this chord. It says it's really Wm minus 1 of the thing where I just do what we would call a surgery, do this. So in this case, the number of circles has actually changed, either increased or decreased. But the number of chords has gone down by 1. This was an n. So using this, you can compute recursively, because at the very end, when we go down to no chords at all, you will see a number of circles. You don't know which, how many, let's say k. And then the answer is, again, it will be 1 if k is 1 and 0. So this I just write 0 otherwise.
This equation, which is 1 plus z squared order.
I'm sorry?
Is that you say?
No, this follows immediately from this gain relation over here. If you understand how a chord is related to one of these crossings, you can see, you actually see here, it follows from this gain relation. But I will not do this now. I just, believe me, this is a recursive computation of this Wn. And now, when I see this, I see spanning trees. You see? Now we are in business. Suppose you try to evaluate this thing on diagrams that live on m circles. So this leads to spanning trees. So suppose you have, say, just for simplicity, 4 circles. So you have a 4-component link. And you have some weight system, and say you take n, which is less than, so this was m equal to 4, we take n less than, strictly less than m minus 1. It means in this case you have only 3 chords you can put. So whatever you do, however you put your chords, you can never connect everybody. So you will get W0. So Wn will be identically 0 on any diagram if the degree is less than m minus 1. I would be allowed
3
chords. Two chords. Yes,
okay.
Thank you. If I have 3 chords, I can do something. I can, for example, I can do this. And then when I do my surgery business, I will get down to 1 component. You see, then it actually becomes something like this. This Wn, W3 of this becomes W0 of, and now I just do the surgery. Okay, I mean, you get the idea, right? Of this, and this is one. So finite type invariants give me, spanning trees, and topology gives me determinant. Now, I didn't explain, but believe me. So that's really nice. So the classical matrix theorem is really some property of the Alexander, of the lowest term of the Alexander Conway polynomial viewed in two different ways. So I thought this was nice. And so this is what we try to understand for this next term, this Levine business, which unfortunately was wiped out. So how does it generalize? So luckily, I prepared something. So we have to upgrade. We have to become a little bit more technical. But I mean, we are almost at the end of my talk, right? So we talk about something I call Jacobi diagrams. So now, instead of doing chord diagrams, I will allow these green things. So they could have internal trivalent vertices. So again, physically, this corresponds to Chern-Simons, I mean, trivalent phi cube or whatever. Don't really understand this. But I have diagrams like this. So instead of having chords, I have diagrams like this. And then the space of Jacobi diagrams, well, it will be all these diagrams modulo some relations. I have a notion of degree. The degree is 1/2 the number of vertices. So that would fit if it were chords. Every chord has two vertices. So unitrivalent diagrams, I have univalent vertices here, and also trivalent vertices on the inside. And I have these cyclic orientations. But the relations say that if I change the cyclic orientation, I just get a minus sign. So usually I have a convention. I don't draw the cyclic orientation. It's always the canonical one. I have this called STU relation, which sort of defines what a trivalent vertice is in terms of chords. And this four-valent thing is not there. The thing is completely abstract. It's not embedded anywhere. And this is the so-called Jacobi or IHX relation. And what this thing is really engineered to the following, but I will not really have time to get into this, to define linear forms from it, which come from Lie algebras. And in this sense, Alexander Conway corresponds to GL11, and that I understand. But anyway, so the fact is that this space AN of M is actually isomorphic to this Q of Jacobi diagrams of degree N. And again, then modulo these three relations, antisymmetry, STU, and Jacobi. So in other words, in fact, if you're using these relations, you can expand every trivalent vertex in terms of chords. And I claim you get exactly the same space. But now, with these things at our disposal, we can talk about diagrams that somehow look like this, like my edges of my three graphs. And so what happens is there is a fact, which I don't really have time to explain, but somehow there is a way. So this weight system, somehow weight system, comes from this Lie superalgebra GL11. And there are very old papers by Kaufmann, Saleur, or Rosansky about this, which I never understood. But then with this new technology, I mean, not so new anymore, actually, I can make some sense out of this. And I will not explain how from a Lie algebra you get a linear form right now. But anyway, so this gives me some way to get at these Milner numbers because of the following fact. So it's a theorem, in fact, which I proved with Habegger some time ago, is that actually Milner numbers correspond somehow to coefficients of tree diagrams in this A, well, just tree diagrams. And in fact, the way it stands, it doesn't apply here, but this is really for string links. So it means it doesn't actually define for links. So there's some problem with these Milner numbers because there is this problem that they're only defined if the lower ones are zero. So the mu ijk could only be defined if the linking numbers were zero. And so, but in any case, somehow we would say that such a diagram here with Li, Lj, Lk, somehow it is weighted by this Milner number mu ijk. Now what happens is that using this technology of this weight system, you can somehow show that the coefficient, so if all Lij are 0, then the coefficient C2m minus 1 comes from diagrams in Z2m minus 1 of L, which consist of exactly m minus 1 of these y's. So let's do the easiest case. Let's do m equal to 3. So I have 3 circles. And now I try to put exactly 2 of these guys on it. For example, I could do this. I could do this one here, and then this one. Remember, there is no four-valent vertex here. And this then would somehow give me the term mu 1, 2, 3 squared, which is indeed my P3 squared. And now if you think about it, because of this STU relation, there's really nothing else you can do. So if you have just a circle, and you put on this something like this, and here it continues on the right, then STU will tell you, well, this is this, like this, minus the same thing where they cross. But everything is abstract. So there's no embedding anything. So this is 0. So somehow, this diagram is the only one that can be non-trivial.
So these links are not oriented.
Yeah, they are oriented. But it doesn't matter anything. It doesn't matter, believe me. So the only way I put 2 of these guys in such a way that it's non-zero right away is in this fashion. Of course, there is some symmetry, but they all give me the same number because of the anti-symmetry of these new ijks. So what is the general story here? How do I get to the Pfaffian 3 polynomial in the remaining 1 minute, or 2 minutes, I guess. I started 2 minutes, 5 minutes late. Huh? So I guess I won't have time, but I just show you what happens. So if you understand this Lie algebra business, you can find some relations for this weight system W of GL11. And so, for example, this corresponds to some property of the Lie algebra. This corresponds to the fact that the Lie algebra is solvable, stuff like this. Somehow, all I want you to focus on is this corollary here. We have a picture like this. Imagine we have m of these circles. And now we have 2 y's, and there is no other y somehow sitting on this circle. Then it says I have a reduction like this. I can replace this y just by simple chords. So in some sense, I've decreased the degree by 1, and also have decreased this number of circles by 1. So it follows from this one together with this one, or something like this. Now let's think about a second. We have, according to what I claimed here, we have m minus 1 of these guys. They have 3m minus 3 endpoints. The total number of circles is m. There must be a circle which has exactly 2 of these y's. Because nobody can have just 1. It would be immediately 0. So I can, using these relations, recursively evaluate wm of these diagrams. So here should be a W2 m minus 1 of these diagrams. And now I claim this is going to be, this is, no, the claim was that this was going to give me the Pfaffian 3 polynomial squared. But it's the same story. When you look at the Pfaffian tree polynomial squared, again, so we have this Pm squared, so we have something like y1, 2, 3, y3, 4, 5, plus, etc., squared. Again, because it's spanning, every vertex has to appear at least once here. So in every monomial you have here, every vertex has to appear at least twice. On the other hand, there must be a vertex which appears exactly twice, because we don't have enough. Same argument as before. So it means that if I now assume that I take some monomial in here, it will contain something like, say, y123, y145, for example. And then product of other things. And there's no other things, but there's no one here. Such a thing must exist. Now I do my contraction deletion business and just take out this 1, 2, 3 and this 1, 4, 5. I mean, I'm not going to do it now. But you see, I'm going to get some kind of formula. And in this end, it just matches up perfectly with this one. And so in this way, I will get that. So after some combinatorial things, because it depends on whether they are distinct or maybe they are the same. I mean, these 2, 3, and 4, 5 could actually coincide. Anyway, so at some point, I somehow get that this C2M minus 1 is indeed this PM squared in the triple Milner numbers mu I j k. So this is how it comes about from this finite type invariant business. So in fact, this gives you another proof. But of course, it's a complicated proof. I guess this is basically my talk. How does it generalize this whole thing? So we have something for higher order Milner numbers. Malek has this thing where he generalizes to somehow things which correspond to polygons. But somehow it would mean in my language, it would be something that's completely anti-symmetric. It would have, say, in this case, five vertices, but it would be completely skew-symmetric here. And from my point of view, this is not good enough. Because the Jacobi diagrams on these five vertices, there's not just a one-dimensional space. It's only for three that it's a one-dimensional space, this lambda 3. But if somehow the Jacobi diagrams, sort of on five vertices like this, is not one-dimensional, and you have to somehow deal with this when you want to go to higher things. But anyway, so there is some generalization. And the hope was, in fact, that there would be some kind of even more fantastic Pfaffian polynomial for higher trees. But we didn't find it. And maybe it doesn't exist. Maybe there's only determinant in Pfaffian. I don't know. But thank you for your attention. And,
questions?
Does there exist an Alexander Conway polynomial in a further variable?
Yes,
which
yes.
If you have.
You can take a variable for every component. It's called a multivariable Alexander polynomial.
Sorry?
I can take a variable for every component of my link. It's called the multivariable Alexander polynomial. It works the same.
If you can have such, relax this 1-0 weight in such a way that you take x to the m minus 1.
I'm sorry? Say it again?
Can you, such that when you have m unlinked knots, in the definition, sorry.
In which definition?
In the blackboard definition of Alexander Conway.
Here? Yes.
Yes. The second one is such that you have, instead of 1, lambda to m minus 1.
Yeah, I mean, it will be some specialization of the multivariable one. But let's maybe discuss this in private, because I think people want to. We have to go to this photo opportunity. But anyway, there was another question.
Yeah, let me just ask quickly. So there is this, so if I understood it well, you proved that for links, this weight system,
yes,
the leading set term of the weight system is determinant, right? Or Pfaffian or the interpretation. So
well, under the hypothesis that certain diagrams don't play a role. So this was under the hypothesis that in my conservative integral, there are no chords.
Mm-hmm. So there is this, I know that this Barnatan and Garofalo interpret the leading term as the term.
This is really for knots, though.
So that was the question.
Yeah,
so they deal with knots.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. This doesn't tell me anything about knots. This is a query for links. I mean, I have something of knots too. But yes?
So these spaces C and M, we don't know the dimension.
Yes, and this would be really something great if somebody
so
could do this.
I have a question related to that. When you pick, so you should pick any group SUN,
yes.
And you have a map of this.
Yes.
Do you have a projection map into some representation of the group?
In some sense, yes. So what you really have to do is you have to take a Lie algebra, and then for every component of your link, you have to have a representation. And somehow these relations, STU, which have somehow gone away, told you that this is somehow you can evaluate using such a diagram. And Vogel showed that there are diagrams which cannot be detected by these Lie algebras. So there is something we really don't know. And so there are lower bounds on the dimension because you can detect lots of things using Lie algebras, but and there are upper bounds because, for example, it's just the number of chords. That's certainly known. But we don't know the dimension. I think for n equal 10, we already don't know the dimension. Well, certainly for 13, we don't know the dimension. So Barnatan is the best computer, has the best computer results, and later we don't know. So it would be very nice. I mean, it's just a linear problem. I mean, I gave you these relations. It's just a linear problem.
Sometimes to determine, like I was thinking of like spaces of invariants.
Yes, yes. This gives you lower bounds. This gives you lower bounds.
I was hoping that by increasing the dimension of the n, the SUN, for instance, one would not get more relations due to this projection than what was already there at the level of the graphical level.
By the way, I would like to, since Xavier, I would like to apologize. So, I mean, certainly he has nothing against lambda 3 and S2 and so on. I was just joking because we had a discussion this morning.